So thinking about Wilson Harris is always really interesting to me. He's so famous for his literary production, for his novels, which were written partly, some of them written as one-off novels, but also, you know, trilogies and you know, big stories that he wanted to tell about the nature of the Caribbean and about the mysteries of really of Caribbean identity and so many of the things that we've already been discussing across multiple figures, right? This question of, you know, what exactly is Caribbeanness? How can we talk about a uniformity across across such difference? And I think that Glissant and Benitez Rojo and Walcott start to give us these really interesting answers on the model of Creole. Right, that as model of mixtures of difference that nevertheless makes something like a sameness or an identity. But when I think about Wilson Harris, I think about him both as a contributor to that tradition, but also someone who's working from a very different perspective. On the one hand, he works very much from the Caribbean perspective and this obsessive return to the question of difference. The obsessive return to the question of difference, I think, is just endemic to the tradition, the Caribbean critical theory tradition, because it's a feature of the world, right? It's a feature of the world that, starting really in the 1970s, takes over as the central concern for writers, right? Whether they're novelists and poets or critical theorists. Before that, as we've seen, the concern was very much more phenomenological and a concern with nature and landscape, right? A sense of an embodied presence to the world and what the uniqueness of the Caribbean landscape might mean to identity and identity formation. So Harris is very much working in these two essays, very late essays in his career. So they're, I think, in some ways retrospective, right? Looking back at his literary production and trying to draw out some of these really important ideas that animated the fiction and put them in a critical essay. But I think what we see when we look at that trajectory of Harris's work is just how much his work is also... it's deeply informed by this turn towards Creole as both a language and an identity, but it's also so deeply connected to the surrealist tradition because he is so interested in the embodied presence of the writer and the theorist to the world. I mention this because his work as a land surveyor, which predated his him taking on this the work of literature, is it's not just a kind of interesting side anecdote for me. For me, it tells you something about how Harris is drawing on, you know, a particular kind of it's a vocation, but a particular kind of experience of looking at land, right? Of looking at places, and a place like Guyana, he's looking at a place that has such varied geographies. So that already, I think, the varied geographies of both, you know, desert and jungle and everything in between, that varied landscape already makes the question of landscape and the question of embodied presence to the world very creolized, because we're not talking about a sort of uniform island-wide climate or physical features, right? Or even, he's not even focused in that way on the local, but instead on the broader national space. And when you start to think like that, I think the landscape itself creolizes, because it starts to say, you know, look, what we mean by Guyana is all of these places. And all of those places very well may end up being different than each other, but are part of the same thing. And this gets us back to this this recurring theme in Caribbean critical theory, starting really with Walcott and Glissant, this notion of a difference that takes center stage and a difference that proliferates differences while at the same time holding on to some sense of identity. And I think that Harris is absolutely connected to that and committed to that. But he's also coming from a different kind of nation. And so when he says Creole and Creoleness in these essays, on the one hand, he means just what people have meant across the Caribbean and what we've discussed in previous conversations in class or in podcast pieces, both mine and student collaborations, which is this notion of Creole as a longstanding identity, right? First, the identity of European whites who spent time in the Caribbean or in the tropics, who, you know, with climatological theories of race had become different kinds of people, right? And then comes to also be, and perhaps more emphatically be, a name for mixed race people of various kinds. In particular, in in most Caribbean countries, that means a mixture of European and African origins would make someone Creole, right, in terms of the racial identity question. But already that's different when you start to talk about it in the context of Guyana, where you're also talking about so many people who are also indigenous and Indo-Caribbean. And so the indigeneity, the Indo-Caribbean, and the history of indentured servitude, and the African and the European or the British. We've introduced two other factors in this Creole question that for him, I think, complicates it. And it complicates it in ways that Walcott was talking about in his Nobel lecture in the Antilles essay, where he was talking about all these different features of the Ramlila festival that he's watching in Felicity. And he's saying, you know, I see the East Asian, the South Asian, the Middle Eastern, the African, and the European all at play. But I think that Walcott, his imagination sort of leaves that as a question. And I think Harris in these two essays, these two late essays on the Genesis, Unfinished Genesis of the Imagination and Creoleness as a Crossroads of Civilization, both of these essays really are trying to reckon with the things that Walcott had opened up but hadn't explored in depth. And that's fine. I mean, nobody has to explore everything, and that's why you have multiple writers on similar or same themes. So that's really where I think Walcott leaves us, that it leads to the necessity of the kind of work that Wilson Harris is doing. And in that work, one of the things I find so interesting about the Crossroads of Civilization essay is, first of all, this notion of crossroads, right? That the Caribbean had long been referred to as crossroads of the world. And as crossroads of the world, it's where so many multiple senses of identity and force come into play and mix, right? Here, rehabilitating that notion of a crossroads, he says, you know, crossroads of civilization. I think there he's really talking about, like, what would it mean to think civilization on the model of the Creole rather than civilization on the model of the single root that then gets mixed, right? That is, what if we started with this notion of Creoleness? What if we started with this notion of Creoleness as a civilizational force? Again, to recall our very first reading from M.A. Césaire, what if we thought of civilizational force as a Creole force rather than Creole being something that reconciles, mixes, deals with, however you want to characterize it, the work of multiple imperial and subjugated forces, right? Subaltern and imperial forces. Instead of Creole doing the work, what if Creole was the actual civilization to start with? Well, one of the consequences of that, and this is worth so much discussion, and I'm not sure, you know, that I have a settled view on it myself, and I imagine a lot of other people would be wrestling with it as well, because it's such a complicated issue and question, which is, you know, what if we affirm Creole as a civilizational identity? That helps give a new term or a new framing or what Benitez Rojo was after when he used that singular island when he talked about in the title of his book, the repeating island, right? What is that island? Well, it's a civilization and it's Creole. That's Wilson Harris again, sort of completing Benitez Rojo's sentence for him. But if we think about it as an identity, one of the challenges, and I like that Harris is so explicit and personal about it, where he says, you know, that means that we have to start to think about ourselves as not members of an identity that is typically in the economy of our world that is typically ascribed to us. And so for him, you know, the leading example is Black, right? Is Wilson Harris a Black writer? Are Caribbean writers Black writers if they have, you know, African origin, right? Are they Black writers? And what does that mean to say Black writer? What is the meaning of Black there? And Harris, on the one hand, is, you know, saying, well, Black, you know, that's the African origin part, and that's part of the Creole story. But that it's also a term that is utterly devoid of content. What it has at best, that term Black, is what M.A. Césaire called in our very first reading, what he called horizontal solidarity, right? That we share, you know, Black people share across time a similar historical experience of white terror, white violence, and white subjugation, and the struggle to liberate self from that. But that beyond that sense of shared beleaguerment and struggle, there is no real content to it. And in that way, I think Wilson Harris almost has like an anthropological appeal, right? Or is making an anthropological appeal. Like, what does someone from Mali have to do with someone from Guyana? And if you think about the someone from Guyana on their own terms, rather than thinking of them as extensions of Africa, right? In other words, moving away from diasporic language and toward the affirmation of the kinds of civilizations that centuries of existence in the Caribbean have formed, right? Have been able to create. We might need a new term, and not might, we need a new term for that identity. And that's what Creole is for him. Because this notion that's so persistent, right, in the essay, this notion of an involuntary association, it's extremely important, because what he's saying with that is that racialized language in a place like the Caribbean that talks about, in this case, Black and Black people, doesn't really attend to the very particular differences and unique historical experiences of Caribbeans. And the way that centuries of this unique experience have made Caribbeans different than Africans. And different than Africans is not a normative claim. It's not saying that it's good, it's bad, it's what you ought to do. It's purely descriptive. It's, you know, the mixture of all of these things. And Guyana is going to be like this incredibly potent example because of the multiple force, you know, in terms of racial heritage, as well as languages and politics and empire and resistance and all of that, as well as mixed bloodlines, so to speak. I hate that phrase, bloodlines, but why not? But the idea of mixed racial heritages is so deeply the story of the Caribbean that it really doesn't make sense to hold on to any involuntary association, because in associating someone with, say, the category Black, right, you erase what is actually gives meaning to their very identity and their sense of belonging in certain places in the world. I think the only sort of example, right, or experience that Harris needs to appeal to in this is that sense of belonging, say, in, you know, neighborhoods in Kingston, Jamaica, and then going to Namibia and being around other quote-unquote Black people and not belonging there, not belonging in terms of language, in terms of values, in terms of food, in terms of music, and, you know, all those cultural things that make an identity. What does it mean to not belong with other Black people, but to belong with, say, West Indians? that belong with West Indians, but not belong with Black people broadly, is this moment where Harris is like, that's exactly the point I'm making. That sense of belonging where you try to force us all into this associative category, Black, doesn't actually describe anything of content. Can you have solidarity? That's political struggle and sympathy and assistance, aid, maybe even sacrifice. Absolutely. That's not actually what's being questioned by Harris. What's being questioned by Harris is this notion that you can actually talk about a culture and a people on those terms, right? That Black is less something that describes a reality in the world than it is something that's like a deep rhetorical, and an important one, deep rhetorical appeal to different kinds of people in order to share a similar struggle. And that may or may not be effective, but when it's effective, it's temporary. Because there's no sameness across these places, right? But what there is a sameness is in the Caribbean, this sense of mixed cultural heritage, and the way mixed cultural heritage becomes a single cultural heritage, right? Not singular in the, single in the sense of being static and fixed, but single in the sense of being unlike all those others. So I really think, I really always want to emphasize that part of Harris where he's not like, oh, I don't want to be associated with Black. It's not a sort of fear of Blackness or insecurity or sense of inferiority or anything like that. He is simply really appealing there to a sense of historical unicity that the Caribbean has, and that all places have, quite frankly. But this sense of a unique kind of history. And you have to take that seriously as not only the legacy of world building and what you use to build worlds, in this case, to build a civilization in the Caribbean. It's not just that, you know, that it's just a way of reckoning with all those forces, but also the way those multiple forces and the uniqueness of that means that these things, right, this moment needs its own name. And the needing its own name, that I really love about this. So that Creole for him is a name for a thing that's a direct description. It's not a name for an aspiration, but it's a name for a direct description if we take it seriously as a direct description of how people live, think, and have a sense of belonging. Then it requires a repudiation of so many of our other commonly held terms. But, and this is the last thing I'll say, what's also important is when Harris talks about when he talks about affirming this notion of Creoleness, it doesn't mean that Creoleness becomes locked up into itself, because like Glissant, he has a deep sense of how affirming a notion of Creoleness might open up ethical questions about the imagination. And that's why that notion of the imagination is so crucial in Harris's nonfiction, because he always comes back to it, that something about the imagination, what he calls a quantum imagination, is capable of making erratic, unexpected movements that bring things together that shouldn't belong together, right? Like the story of, you know, a biblical story and the story of Legba. Right, the way these things come together, the way Christianity and Judaism and indigenous West African religions meet in a place like Cuba, that's Benitez Rojo, meet in Martinique, meet in Guyana, and produce the same but different trickster figure, right? Also an interpretive and creative figure. All of those things are possible because the imagination is not a linear or mappable operation. Rather, the imagination is quantum, so it has erratic movements that, like quantum, fields, also produce stable realities. But also, when we return to the imagination as a quantum imagination, it's always capable of saying something else, of saying something different than we had expected and could ever expect. And that's exactly what we want from the imagination, right? Is a way of saying we're not bound by a sense of involuntary association, right? We've now entered the realm of the voluntary and the imaginative in order to affirm Creoleness as a kind of civilization. But like all senses of civilization, right, it's a condition of belonging and also radical intervention at the ethical level in terms of what it would mean to encounter and capture without holding, right? So capture the imagination, right? Otherness, right? To be captivated by otherness is to then operate with this sense of the new, this sense of the unexpected, in with the aim of producing a deeper and wider sense of a creolized reality. That's an ethics of the imagination, an ethics of cultural encounter. And in that way, I think it also answers some of these questions that, you know, I had mentioned multiple times in the beginning of the semester, which is when you have these theorists like M.A. Césaire or Frantz Fanon, who are so obsessed with this notion of non-being. It's like, well, if we have no being, how can we be revolutionary? How can we have imaginations? How can we actually transform our worlds? Well, Creoleness starts to give an answer to that, because it's like, well, you need a new model of what an identity is so that you're actually in being, but in being in a different way. In being as a cluster and chaos of beings, right, of fragments. And the imagination is what allows that sense of marginality, but also agency and creativity to meet, to produce worlds, to produce culture and produce possibilities. So I'll end with this quotation, which is one of my favorite quotations from the Caribbean and certainly from Wilson Harris, where he writes, "The quantum imagination, in my view, may be curiously visualized as a revisionary epic which seeks to reclaim extra-human faculties in incandescent equations between being and non-being."